Welcome back to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. In a speech delivered at the World Conference Against Atomic and Hydrogen Bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan, on August 3, 2007, Joseph Gerson said the following. My argument is not that U.S. use and threatened use of nuclear weapons have always succeeded. Instead, successive U.S. presidents, their most senior advisors, and many in the Pentagon have believed that U.S. use of nuclear weapons have achieved U.S. goals in the past. Furthermore, these presidents have repeatedly replicated this ostensibly successful model. In fact, the U.S. commitment to nuclear dominance and its practice of threatening nuclear attacks have been counterproductive, increasing the danger of nuclear war in yet another way, spurring nuclear weapons proliferation. No nation will long tolerate what it experiences as an unjust imbalance of power. It was primarily for this reason that the Soviet Union and China, North Korea, and quite probably Iran, opted for nuclear weapons. Now we continue our interview with leading nuclear specialist and peace campaigner Joseph Gerson about his newest book, Empire and the Bomb. You're listening to Voices of Our World.
The rhetoric right now that's happening between Iran and the world, do you feel they've been almost threatened to the point where now they have to pursue it?
Well, to begin with, we need to recognize that Israel says it lives in a dangerous neighborhood, but just down the street is where Iran lives, and in a neighborhood that the United States has prepared and threatened to initiate nuclear war on at least a dozen occasions, most recently against them. Earlier, both in the post Cold War and the Cold War period, what Iran's intentions are, I think none of us can have absolute confidence in reporting. On the one hand, they affirm that they have the right, and the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty certainly gives them the right to generate nuclear power for energy consumption. Frankly, I think that no country should be doing this, but legally they have the right to do it. The question is whether they are trying to get a nuclear weapon, and there was some secrecy involved earlier. The International Atomic Energy Agency has said that thus far they've been unable to find any evidence of a nuclear weapons program, and more importantly, I think it was just recently revealed in the New York Times. That in 2003, the Iranians submitted a paper to the United States mm-hmm. proposing essentially a comprehensive agreement with the U.S., which would have addressed the nuclear weapons issue with them not developing them, would have addressed militarization of the Persian Gulf, would have addressed their relationship to the Palestinians and Hezbollah in Lebanon. And the Bush administration simply refused to even consider it. Much as they attempted to refuse to deal with Kim Jong-il in North Korea in ways that were certainly not helpful. So I think at this point, for those of us who have concern about the possibility of a U.S. Attack against Iran or the possibility of Iran developing nuclear weapons, what we need to be urging is that our government engage in direct negotiations with the Iranians, that they take up their offer, and that we also, as we did with North Korea, make a pledge of non-aggression, which would certainly take a lot of the pressure out of the current situation.
I must say I'm a little almost shocked at how easily even we in this discussion can talk about nuclear war.
Yeah.
And how the fact is that the heads of state who have their fingers on the button, although they understand the fact that this would destroy mankind pretty much if there was ever to be such a war, yet there still are cavalierly threatening nations and even sharing the technology to begin with. Where are the heads of state who are stronger voices against nuclear weapons?
Mm-hmm.
All I hear is that the options are always on the table. I never hear someone decrying their use and calling to task the governments that continually use their weapons to threaten others.
Yeah, well, I mean, here again, there was the public broadcasting program with Bill Moyer about the failures of the press in the lead up to the invasion of Iraq, and certainly there's a very long history of press failures in relationship to really the world's efforts to force the nuclear powers to implement their commitments under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And steps for moving ahead are well known. Mm-hmm. It's just been distributed to all the government representatives at the NPT preparatory conference in Vienna. It's taking place as we speak. So the roadmap is there. During the 2002 NPT review conference, which was facing collapse because of U.S. refusals to honor its commitments, countries, what's called the New Agenda Coalition, radical revolutionary countries like Mexico and Sweden and Ireland and South Africa, all ultimately forced the U.S. and nuclear powers to make an irrevocable commitment. That's the precise words, irrevocable commitment, to fulfill their Article 6 commitment to negotiate the elimination of their nuclear arsenals. They also committed to take 13 steps in that direction, including negotiation of a comprehensive test ban treaty, which the U.S. has yet to ratify, negotiation of a fissile material cutoff treaty, and so on. But as I say, the United States has filled so far one half of one of the 13 steps. So the rest of the world is doing what it can to put pressure. Another important force in all this is the non-aligned movement, which has been pushing very hard in the UN and other forums.
This is Voices of Our World, a weekly program dedicated to the issues of human rights, poverty, and social justice. Visit our website at voicesofourworld.org to learn more about Voices of Our World in Maryknoll. Now back to our interview with author Joseph Gerson, the director of programs of the American Friends Service Committee in New England, whose new book is titled Empire and the Bomb. You're listening to Voices of Our World.
One of the last questions I'd like to ask you is this. I was watching one of the Democratic debate for president, and one of the questions was a hypothetical. If two American cities had been attacked by a nuclear bomb, how they respond. Mm. And basically the consensus was that immediately retaliation was in measure.
Right.
And I was just thinking logically that given the fact that there are loose nukes out there and many disgruntled people, religious or not, who are willing to use them, if a small terrorist group from England did a crime here in America, we couldn't nuke England.
Many people have pointed that out, that it doesn't particularly help to destroy all of Pakistan if a small band of people up in northern Wajiristan managed to get a hold of even what's called a dirty bomb. Mm-hmm. I think it's helpful to kind of discern some of the differences between the different kinds of weapons that are out there and what people are likely to be able to do. The big fear has been that the mafia, the Russian mafia, or some other group might be able to put a nuclear weapon as a whole out on the market, and a non-state group or even a so-called rogue state buy one and then smuggle it in and use it. Certainly, we need to be concerned about this. We need to be putting more money into the what's called the Nunn-Lugar legislation to basically help the Russians lock down what they've got. Certainly, this is not helped by the very aggressive military positions we're taking against Russia these days. I mean, the idea of putting missile defenses around Russia is ultimately designed to neutralize their entire nuclear arsenal, so that we can dictate terms to them, much as we've been trying to do with China. The other thing I want to come back to is this concept of a dirty bomb, and this is, if you will, more likely, but not sweet. It's not something that has the heat of the sun and destroys the city in 9 seconds like the Hiroshima bomb. It's more something like industrial waste, radioactive material put around a couple of sticks of dynamite, which are exploded or not. This would kill very few people, but it could poison an area, say, of several blocks in a city. If it were, for example, near the stock exchange in New York, that would cause considerable disruption. But the other part of it here is then, and I think through radio programs like this and other forums, I think we have to talk rationally about what's out there and to help people think about, how one really responds to such a situation. And a case in point would be the terrorist attack on the subways in London. It was not the kind of response we had here in the United States of hysteria, of whipped up military responses, you know, it was seen as a problem. They began to address it as a crime and to arrest people and pursue things through intelligence. And people were back on the subways the next day. And, you know, they in a sense did a stiff upper lip and moved ahead in a thoughtful way that ensured their security. I think we need to begin to think in less hysterical ways here in the United States.
Joe, is there any sort of site you want us to link to?
Yeah, people can link to www.afsc.org/PES, as in Peace and Economic Security.
Okay. Thank you for appearing with us today. The book is Empire and the Bomb, How the U.S. Uses Nuclear Weapons to Dominate the World, and the author is Joseph Gerson.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
Does America practice imperialism? Let us know your opinion. Email us at radio@marynoll.org or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Or you can call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. Well, that concludes today's program. Joseph Gerson is just one of the many voices of our world. I'm your host for this week's show, Eileen Bott. This program was produced by Michael Ramadan Jones. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or Mary Knoll. Please visit our website at www.voicesofourworld.org, where you can listen, learn more about our program, answer our weekly question, or subscribe to our podcast. In the coming months, our Spanish language program, Voces de Nuestro Mundo, will be made available for broadcast. Please visit our site for more details and information. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.
Escucha a las voces del mundo.
El sufrimiento del inocente es un desafío muy grande a la conciencia humana. Yo creo además que es el problema mayor que se presenta a los seres humanos.
¿Qué son los problemas de las mujeres indígenas?
Bueno, los problemas de las mujeres indígenas más que nada es uno, el machismo.
Mucha gente inocente, sobre todo mujeres, niños, niñas y ancianos, que no podían escapar de las bombas y de las balas cuando el ejército atacaron a la población civil que intentaba escapar.
Bienvenido a Las Voces del Mundo, un programa de radio dedicado a la justicia social, con el particular punto de vista hispano.
Este trabajo es a largo plazo, uno no van a provocar cambios de una mañana a otra, pero creemos firmemente que a través de la capacitación y de la educación podemos concientizar a nuestro autocuidado y mejorar condiciones de vida al futuro.
La pobreza es una especie de fracaso de la creación.
Las Voces del Mundo va a estar disponible pronto y buscamos tu apoyo. Cada programa durará 28 minutos y se podrán hacer downloads del programa en nuestra página electrónica. Las Voces del Mundo es un producto de Marynoll. Para más información, por favor envíanos un email a radio@marynoll.org. radio@marynoll.org. Escucha a las voces del mundo.